recently we've had some big anniversaries of major events like Lincoln's election, the Emancipation Proclamation, the end of the Civil War, Lincoln's death. Reconstruction seems to be a lot more difficult to pinpoint a specific moment. And does that make it more difficult when you're trying to put on an event like this?
Yes, it does, because Reconstruction really can be considered to have started during the Civil War, actually. And in 1863, when Lincoln puts forward a plan for reconstructing the Confederate states, bringing them back into the Union. And it's usually considered to have ended the Reconstruction period in 1877, when a Republican president, Rutherford B. Hayes, withdrew all federal troops from the South who were necessary to keep the Republican Party in power in three southern states.
And see, I've always thought of Reconstruction much beyond that point. But, you know, the efforts of the South to rebuild, the efforts of the South, maybe even into the 20th century. Is that just wrong, or is that, you know, just a broader view of looking at Reconstruction?
Well, no, it's not wrong. Another way to look at Reconstruction is to focus on what happens on the federal level with regard to black citizenship rights. And the end of Reconstruction, in some minds, occurs with the notorious decision in Plessy versus Ferguson in 1896, which ruled that separate but equal facilities for blacks were constitutional. They were not a violation of the 14th Amendment, which guarantees equal protection of the laws. And that was the decision which was finally overturned in 1954 in Brown versus Board of Education. So the end of attempts on the federal level to guarantee black full citizenship really comes to a screeching halt. It had been slowing down for quite a while, but it comes to a screeching halt with Plessy versus Ferguson.
You have some guest speakers coming into the Lincoln Legacy Lectures. If you could talk about both of them and also what they plan to address Thursday night.
Yes, we have two distinguished historians coming to campus on Thursday. Alan Gelzo, who's spoken on campus before, who was a very forceful speaker and a leading authority on the Civil War and Reconstruction period, as well as a Lincoln scholar. Alan is one of the most distinguished scholars of the Civil War and Reconstruction period, and we're very glad to have him back. Brooks Simpson is a leading authority on the Civil War period, too. He is a specialist on U.S. Grant. He has written the most reliable biography of U.S. Grant and has done a book on Reconstruction presidents. And he teaches at Arizona State, and he is also a very forceful and thoughtful historian. And so we're very happy to have both of them here. And they're going to be talking about Lincoln and Reconstruction and also about Reconstruction in general and how it laid the groundwork for the second Reconstruction of the 20th century, in which an attempt was made to revive the spirit of the first Reconstruction, that is to make black people full-fledged citizens, to really enforce the 14th Amendment, equal protection of the laws. So the 1964 Civil Rights Act and the 1965 Voting Rights Act were made possible by the first Reconstruction, during which time the 14th Amendment to the Constitution was passed and the 15th Amendment guaranteeing black voting rights and black citizenship rights.
You're also going to be giving some remarks that night, and I saw that your remarks are going to be titled Lincoln's Changing Thoughts on Reconstruction. That's always a pretty fascinating topic as far as what Lincoln thought about the South going forward at the end of the war. What do you view as Lincoln's view?
Well, Lincoln, during the Civil War, in 1863, in December, put forward a Reconstruction plan, which became known as the 10% Plan. It said that in any Confederate state where the Union Army had occupied all or part of the state, if a number of voters equal to 10% of the voters who cast ballots in 1860 would take an oath of allegiance to the Union, that state could then begin to the process of Reconstruction. It had to adopt a new constitution, which would abolish slavery, and it could then have its own governors, legislators, courts. It could elect members to the House and the Senate. It could participate in presidential elections. Members of Congress dug in their heels and said, well, that's really not sufficient. 10% is really not a majority after all. And so Lincoln's plan, which was regarded as too lenient to the South, was under attack. And Lincoln then moved toward Congress in April of 1865 when the Confederate forces under Robert E. Lee surrendered. And 2 days later, he moved in the direction of Congress by saying that he believed that black people should be allowed to vote, at least those who had served gallantly in the Union Army and the very intelligent, by whom he probably meant, we assume, the literate. And so Lincoln was moving away from the very lenient plan of 1863 to the more comprehensive plan of 1865, largely because the war was over. And the reason he made that move was because in 1863, his principal goal was to get the South to surrender and to encourage them to throw in the towel, to surrender, offered it a lenient, generous set of peace terms. But once the South had surrendered, when Lee had surrendered, there was no longer any necessity to hold out peace terms that would encourage them to quit, because they had already quit involuntarily, to be sure.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Burlingame. He's the Chancellor Naomi Lynn Distinguished Chair in Lincoln Studies at the University of Illinois Springfield. We're talking about Thursday night's Lincoln Legacy Lecture Series on the UIS campus. I've always heard that Lincoln, most people thought, would have been much more lenient toward the South had he lived, that Reconstruction would have gone a lot differently. But it sounds as though you're not sure about that, maybe by some of the remarks you made.
Well, it's very hard to know what Lincoln would have actually done, but it's pretty clear that when it came to black citizenship rights, Lincoln was going to insist on those, that black people had served in the Union Army about 180,000, about 9% of the Union Army was made up of black soldiers, and Lincoln believed that they had certainly earned their citizenship rights. And by calling for franchise for the enfranchisement of the Union Army veterans, Lincoln was in effect entering the thin edge of the wedge into the log. And it was limited, to be sure, but once he had entered the thin edge of the wedge, you could count on him to drive home the thick edge of the wedge, and it wouldn't just be black veterans of the Union Army, but black potential voters in general, that is, all males over 21.
Some of the other events we mentioned at the beginning, like the Emancipation Proclamation and the Civil War, most people understand that. A lot of people still struggle, even educated people, to explain Reconstruction. Why is that? It doesn't, you know, I don't remember it really being taught that much, and certainly in high school, you know, when I look back at American history, I never really heard a whole lot about Reconstruction or learned that much of it. It took a lot longer to hear what took place there.
Well, Reconstruction was, in the short run, a failure, insofar as it was an attempt to make the Emancipation Proclamation a living reality for black people. And that wasn't Lincoln's fault. There are a number of reasons for that, but the attempt to really make the Emancipation Proclamation a living reality, to guarantee black civil rights, guarantee black voting rights, was tried, and it failed. And it took us almost a century as a nation to honor those pledges with the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And so the Civil War is looked back upon as a triumph of American nationalism, and Reconstruction is looked on as a kind of failure of American nationalism. And I think that's the main reason. Another reason is that for a long time, Reconstruction was regarded as a disgraceful period in American history when vindictive radical Republicans in Congress seeking to punish the South passed punitive legislation and put the South to the torture. And this is the image you get in movies like Birth of a Nation, that is the first version of Birth of a Nation in 1916, in Gone with the Wind. And when I was in school, this is back shortly after the earth cooled, Reconstruction was regarded as this disgraceful period. Now, since the 1960s, most scholars have agreed that, in fact, Reconstruction was not an exercise in punitive, harsh, vindictive measures, but were measures that were designed to allow black people to become full-fledged citizens. And those measures were regarded by white Southerners as punitive and vindictive because anything that was done to help black people achieve those rights was regarded as an insult by white Southerners, and therefore the motives of the legislators were misinterpreted by the white South.
I would think, though, to this day, there are still a lot of folks in the South who still feel that way. I mean, 50-plus years after the Civil Rights Act, you know, was passed at the federal level, there are still people who feel that the South got the short end of the stick following the Civil War, and the ripple effects continue to this day.
That's true. And it takes a long time between the time that scholars, starting in the 1960s, re-examine a period and paint a different picture, and the time that popular culture accepts that. And I tried to get Steven Spielberg to make a movie about Reconstruction.
He chose Lincoln instead, though.
Well, this was after Lincoln. And I had been asked by Spielberg to, along with several other people, to meet with him to discuss the script of the Lincoln movie. I tried through his assistant to get him to entertain the possibility of doing a Reconstruction movie in which the picture of Reconstruction would be more akin to what most scholars believe it to be, a heroic period in which idealism briefly triumphed and then was snuffed out. But so far I've been unsuccessful.
Do you think had Lincoln lived and had he put forth maybe terms more acceptable to the South, would he have been viewed differently in history in the North? Did the North want some type of revenge after the war and he might not have gone along with that the way many people would have hoped?
Well, I don't think so, because Lincoln was a very gifted political leader. And he knew how to get along with Congress. He knew how to distribute patronage accordingly. He knew how to get along personally with leading members of Congress. And I think his ability to get legislation through would have been much more successful than Andrew Johnson, say. And that back when I was in school, I was taught that Lincoln would have been crucified the same way that his successor, Andrew Johnson, was crucified. Johnson was impeached, and he came within one vote of being removed from office. But Johnson was a very different character. He didn't have the kind of moral authority Lincoln did. He didn't have the political skills Lincoln did. He didn't have the wealth of goodwill that Lincoln had accumulated as a result of his leadership during the war and his leading the North to victory. And I think Lincoln could have done a lot better job. On the other hand, Reconstruction was almost bound to fail because there were two mutually incompatible goals of Reconstruction. The first was, as I mentioned earlier, to make black people truly citizens of the U.S., to make the Emancipation Proclamation a living reality. The second goal was to get the white Southerners to feel like Americans again and not to be alienated, to truly restore national unity. The problem was everything you did that Lincoln or anybody would do in a leadership position to encourage white Southerners to feel like Americans again had to be at the expense of blacks, and anything he did to promote black citizenship rights would alienate white Southerners. And so failure was almost built in to the very nature of Reconstruction, given those two incompatible goals. Historians have long argued about what would have happened if Lincoln had lived. And, of course, it's a contrafactual form of history, which many professional historians don't admire. But we have to take some educated guesses about what might have happened. Otherwise, we can't appreciate the significance of historical events. And one of the things that I find compelling as you look at the literature of the time is a speech that Frederick Douglass gave in December of 1865. It's a few months after Lincoln's assassination. And Andrew Johnson had implemented a Reconstruction policy which allowed blacks to be persecuted and former Confederates to rise to positions of power. And Frederick Douglass said in this speech, which unfortunately is not published in any of the collections of Douglass's speeches, but Douglass said that Lincoln had started the process of black citizenship recognition with a speech he gave 2 days after Lee surrendered, which he called for limited black voting rights. And Douglass said in December that if Lincoln had lived, the situation would be very different, that he would not have allowed blacks to be persecuted. He would not have allowed Confederate leaders to reemerge as leading officials in the South. And that Douglass said in a striking sentence that concludes that remarkable speech, which is very little known, that whosoever in the United States has cause to mourn the death of Abraham Lincoln. For the black people of the U.S., Abraham Lincoln's death is an unspeakable calamity. And I think that is insufficiently appreciated.